picture a situation room. It is 2 in the morning.
Right, the classic nightmare scenario.
Exactly. And a brand new, highly sophisticated ransomware strain is just rapidly locking down military logistics networks,
yeah,
like in real time.
Yeah, just tearing through the systems.
Right. So the commander in the room turns to a legal officer and asks, hey, do we have the authority to completely sever this external network connection? You know, even if it cuts off communication with an allied base.
Which is a huge call to make.
A massive call.
Yeah.
So the legal officer scrambles, they open their laptop, and they start desperately using Control F.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Control F through a 400-page PDF document that has been updated since, like, 2018.
Wow.
Just trying to figure out if the rules of engagement actually allow it. And while they read, the malware just continues to spread.
I mean, it is a terrifying scenario, but it highlights a very, very real vulnerability.
Yeah.
Because we tend to think of threats purely in terms of, you know, weapons or technology. But if the rules dictating how you respond to those threats are locked in this stagnant, outdated document,
right,
then the policy itself becomes the vulnerability.
That is the ultimate bureaucratic bottleneck,
yeah,
right there. And it is exactly what we're exploring in today's deep dive.
Yes, absolutely.
We're taking a journey that should completely change how you view the seemingly, I don't know, mundane concept of policy and bureaucracy.
Because it's not boring at all when you really get into it.
Not at all. So our mission today is to understand how the United States Department of Defense, which is, you know, an organization famous for its sprawling, impenetrable bureaucracy.
To put it mildly.
Right. How they are trying to operate a lot more like a Silicon Valley software company just to survive the digital era.
It represents a radical but honestly necessary shift. And to guide us through this, we are looking at a fascinating 2025 white paper.
Yeah, by solutions architect Adam Boas, right? Mm-hmm.
Exactly. It is titled Code as Policy, Transforming Department of Defense Policy with DevSecOps.
Okay, before we go any further, the term DevSecOps is right in the title.
Right.
What does that actually mean for someone who, you know, doesn't work in software engineering?
So it stands for Development, Security, and Operations.
Right.
Traditionally, software developers would build an application, right? Then they'd hand it off to a security team to test it.
Like an assembly line.
Exactly. And then hand it off to an operations team to maintain it. It was slow and everything was siloed.
Gotcha.
DevSecOps is a philosophy that integrates all three of those from day one. So security checks and operational updates happen continuously alongside the development.
Okay, so they're not waiting until the very end to figure out if it's secure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the paper's core argument is that we need to apply this exact same continuous integrated philosophy, not just to software, but to the written rules that govern the military.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
Because the problem Boas outlines is wild when you really think about it.
It really is.
Right now, the vital instructions and directives that govern these massive military operations are mostly just static Microsoft Word or PDF files.
Yeah.
Just sitting in shared folders, or worse, centralized email chains.
In an era where you are dealing with real-time global threats, I mean, autonomous systems, AI, a static document simply cannot keep up. If a new cyber threat emerges, routing a Word document through a dozen different email chains for review takes, well, months.
Oh, easily.
And that lag time between the reality on the ground and the policy on the books actively compromises national security.
So to understand the solution Boas proposes, which he calls code as policy, we first need to look at the painful reality of how these massive organizations currently handle their rules.
Yeah, the current state is rough.
The paper identifies a massive issue called version confusion.
Yes.
I want to try to visualize this for you. Tell me if this works.
Okay, go for it.
It's like a massive multi-generational family recipe book. Over the decades, everyone in the family keeps crossing out ingredients and, you know, adding new ones in the margins.
Right, right.
Sticky notes are falling out.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly nobody knows who added the extra salt, when they added it, or most importantly, why they added it.
That is a perfect analogy. The mechanism of the problem is exactly like that. Except, you know, in the DoD, a misunderstood recipe can result in catastrophic operational failures.
Right, a little more steaks than salty soup.
Just a bit. And that is why the paper suggests moving away from legacy documents entirely.
Completely ditching them.
Yeah, shifting to a concept called docs as code. This is a practice already heavily used by tech giants, like Microsoft and Amazon do this.
Okay.
Instead of having a bunch of isolated Word documents, your documentation is maintained in plain text using version control software.
Like Git.
Exactly. The most famous example of version control is a system called Git.
I hear the term version control thrown around a lot in tech spaces, but how does it actually solve the recipe book problem?
Well, like, what does it do differently than just saving a file as policy final version 2 really final .pdf?
We've all been there with those file names.
Oh, yeah.
So version control introduces four critical attributes. The first one is granular change history.
Okay.
In the software world, this is sometimes called the blame function, though, you know, traceability is probably a better way to look at it.
Traceability sounds nicer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every single edit down to a single comma is captured with an encrypted author signature and a timestamp.
Oh, wow. So you always know exactly who added the salt and when.
Exactly. No more guessing if the change was made in 1998 or yesterday.
That's huge. Okay, what's the second attribute?
The second is branching and merging. Let's say you want to propose a change to a major policy. You do not overwrite the main official document.
Right, you don't mess with the master copy.
You create an isolated copy, a branch to draft, test, and review your changes. And only when a designated authority fully approves it does that branch merge back into the main rulebook.
Got it. Third is tagging and releases. This just ensures there is absolute clarity on what the official active version of a policy is at any given second.
And the paper mentions a fourth attribute called forking, which honestly sounds a lot like branching.
They are very similar, yeah. But forking serves a slightly different operational purpose.
How so?
Forking allows a subordinate command, say, a specific naval base out in the Pacific, to fork or clone the main overarching DoD policy and adapt it slightly for their specific local needs.
Oh, okay.
So they stay synced with the main upstream rules, but they have the flexibility to add granular details that only apply to their environment.
That makes a lot of sense. Actually, we should clarify a terminology point here, because the paper makes a very sharp distinction between code as policy and policy as code.
Yes, that is a crucial distinction.
Because they sound identical, but they mean completely different things.
Policy as code refers to machine-readable, enforceable rules. Think of a piece of software script that literally prevents a server from turning on if it doesn't meet a specific security standard.
Right, it's literal code doing an action.
Exactly. That is policy as code. Code as policy, which is the focus of this white paper, is about managing the human-readable text collaboratively.
I see.
It is treating the English words as if they were software source code.
What's fascinating here is that this isn't just an IT upgrade to keep files neat. It fundamentally changes the legal landscape of the organization.
What's fascinating here is how it connects to the bigger picture, yeah? This is deeply about enhanced transparency and accountability.
Right.
In a military context, knowing who changed a directive isn't just an administrative nicety. If there is a major incident, legal teams and congressional oversight bodies need to reconstruct the exact policy environment that was in effect at that specific millisecond.
Because a rule might have changed halfway through a mission.
Exactly. And version control creates an immutable, permanent snapshot of every single change.
Okay, so this all makes logical sense on paper.
Sure.
But how do you actually build this?
I mean,
the Department of Defense is one of the largest, most highly classified entities on the planet.
It's massive.
How do you implement a software pipeline for bureaucracy without the entire organization grinding to an absolute halt?
Well, the paper provides a very specific implementation framework for this. It moves from theory into an actual pipeline built on a platform called Azure DevOps.
Azure DevOps, okay.
Think of it as a highly structured assembly line for creating and updating rules.
I want to peek under the hood of that assembly line because the paper includes a visual workflow.
Yeah, that diagram is great.
It starts with the source code repository where someone commits a change. What happens the moment that change is submitted?
So that submission triggers what is called continuous integration, or CI.
Right, from DevSecOps.
Exactly. In a CI process, an automated pipeline immediately takes over. It sets up a secure server environment and takes that plain text code and formats it. And the paper specifically mentions using LaTeX for this.
Wait, LaTeX? Like the typesetting system?
That's the one.
Why use that instead of just formatting it in Word? I mean, everyone knows Word.
Because humans are terrible at formatting consistently.
That is fair.
LaTeX uses code tags to define exactly how a document looks. So instead of a human manually fiddling with margins and font sizes to make sure it complies with DoD standards.
Oh, I see.
The LaTeX compiler does it perfectly every single time based on the text input.
So it's foolproof.
Yeah. Once it compiles, the pipeline automatically generates a pristine PDF.
Okay, so the machine builds the document. Does it also check the document?
Yes, that is the validation stage. The pipeline actually runs automated compliance checks.
What kind of checks?
It verifies that mandatory legal sections are present. It checks for broken links, things like that.
Oh, that's smart.
And if the document passes all those automated checks, then it hits a manual approval gate. This is where human experts actually read the content and sign off.
So humans are still in the loop.
Very much so. And once they sign off, the pipeline automatically uploads the published PDF to a secure server, making it instantly available globally.
Okay, there was a specific feature within this repository management that caught my attention. The code owner's file.
Ah,
yes. Yeah.
Because a single Department of Defense instruction might cover a massive range of topics, right?
Yeah.
From uniform standards to network security protocols.
Right. And the code owner's concept addresses a massive bottleneck in large organizations. It allows you to assign specific teams to own distinct sections of a single policy.
So they don't have to read the whole thing.
Exactly. For example, the cyber operations office might exclusively own the cybersecurity section of a broader logistics document.
Okay.
If someone proposes an edit to that specific section, the system automatically routes the approval request only to the cyber team.
Wow. So you're no longer waiting on the entire bureaucracy to review a 400-page document when only one paragraph changed.
Exactly. It's treating the policy like a modular piece of software. And the paper notes this aligns perfectly with broader military modernization initiatives, like JADC2 and the Zero Trust architectures.
Let's define those quickly, because I think they're a crucial context.
Good idea.
So JADC2 stands for Joint All Domain Command and Control, right?
Right. The goal is to connect sensors from all military branches into a single network. So imagine a drone in the Pacific instantly sharing targeting data with a Navy ship.
Okay. And Zero Trust.
Zero Trust is a cybersecurity framework where you never assume a user is safe, even if they are already inside your network. You constantly verify them.
So you don't just trust someone because they have the right badge.
Exactly. And both of those initiatives require massive amounts of granular, rapidly changing data. Static PDF policies actively hinder both JADC2 and Zero Trust.
Okay, I see how it all connects technically, but I have to push back here.
Go for it.
We are talking about Git repositories, LaTeX compiling, continuous integration pipelines, pull requests.
Yeah, it's a lot of jargon.
It is. Does this mean a 4-star general or some senior legal compliance officer needs to learn how to write code and execute a Git merge in a command line terminal just to update a dress code policy?
Right.
Because if you ask a traditional bureaucracy to become software engineers overnight, this entire system will fail before it even starts.
That is a completely valid concern, but the architecture of the system prevents that from happening.
How?
The end user, so the general or the legal officer, they do not need to see the Git backend.
Oh, thank goodness.
Right. The automated pipeline we discussed generates the familiar PDFs, Word documents, or internal web pages. The 4-star general still gets a perfectly formatted PDF on their tablet.
Okay, but what if they want to make an edit?
The legal officer reviews changes through a very simple, user-friendly web portal that abstracts all the complex code commands away. They just click approve or reject.
Ah, so you're building a bridge. The technical complexity is just hidden.
Exactly.
But even with a great interface, the most flawless technical pipeline in the world is completely useless if the human beings using it refuse to change their habits.
Which happens all the time.
So how does the paper address the human element?
Well, you are dealing with people deeply entrenched in their email chains. So the paper outlines mitigation strategies for these non-technical stakeholders, emphasizing comprehensive role-based training programs.
So not just a quick slideshow.
No, you don't just hand them a new software tool. You train them on the cultural shift of transparent collaborative work.
Here's where it gets really interesting for me, regarding how this system actually enforces that cultural shift.
Yeah.
It reminds me of hiding vegetables in the dessert.
How so?
Well, the easy-to-use web portal, the graphical user interface, is the dessert. It's pleasant. It's simple to use.
Right.
But in the background, the automated pipeline is doing the heavy lifting of compliance. So before a proposed change is even allowed to be seen by a human reviewer, the pipeline checks the metadata.
Ah, I see what you're saying.
Like, does this edit have the mandatory Freedom of Information Act disclaimer? Does it have the required classification labels?
Yep.
If it's missing those vegetables, the system rejects the submission automatically. The human reviewer never even wastes their time looking at a flawed draft.
You are basically utilizing the technology to enforce the bureaucracy flawlessly.
Yeah, exactly.
And Boas points to real-world examples to prove this isn't science fiction.
Oh, really? Who's doing this?
He notes that NASA has transitioned portions of their mission documentation to DOCSIS code, and it's drastically reduced errors in complex procedures.
Wow, NASA.
Yeah, and the UK Government Digital Service migrated their policy content to Git-based platforms and actually decreased their publication times by an order of magnitude.
That's incredible.
It really is. This shift flattens the hierarchy and creates what the paper calls agile governance.
Okay, but what about the massive security concerns? We're talking about the Department of Defense.
Yeah.
You can't put classified troop movement policies on, like, a public software repository?
Oh, definitely not. The paper details hosting these repositories on DoD-accredited platforms.
Okay.
For classified materials, they use private instances of version control software operating on the SIPRNet, which is their secure classified network.
That makes sense.
It involves strict role-based access controls and segmenting classified and unclassified policies into entirely separate air-gapped repositories.
And I imagine they don't just flip a switch and roll this out to 3 million employees on a Tuesday.
No, they advocate for a phased rollout. You start with a single flagship policy, use a cross-functional team to work out the cultural and technical bugs, and slowly scale the adoption across different departments.
So assuming the humans are on board, the pipeline is running, and the security is locked down.
A lot of assumptions, but yes.
Right. Then all of the DoD's policy data is finally structured. It's clean, traceable text. And having that structured data unlocks a door to something even more revolutionary.
Yes. This is where we reach the climax of the paper's vision, because once your policy is structured data, your organization is suddenly prepared for the age of artificial intelligence.
Let's talk about the AI integration.
Yeah.
Because in that automated pipeline we discussed earlier during the validation stage, the paper details an actual AI-based analysis tool.
They do. They wrote a Python script utilizing an OpenAI interface to analyze the generated policy documents.
So what does the AI actually look for?
Well, instead of just a human checking for typos, the AI scans the proposed policy text for coherence, correctness, and adherence to professional writing standards.
Oh, wow.
It acts as an automated first-pass reviewer, basically assigning a pass or fail rating based on a deep natural language understanding of the text. And it does this long before a human ever reads it.
That saves so much time.
Yeah.
But it goes far beyond just proofreading. The paper explores the concept of semantic linking and knowledge graphs.
Yeah, this part is wild.
Because the policy is structured code, and AI can read all of it and visually map out the relationships. It can link a high-level policy directive directly to real-time operational data.
Right.
So a decision maker doesn't just read a rule. They see a living digital web of how that rule impacts logistics, pipelines, troop movements, and, you know, the budget.
And that leads to the holy grail of modern defense policy, which is adaptive threat intelligence integration.
What does that look like in practice?
Yeah.
Imagine an AI system monitoring global cyber threat feeds in real time. It detects a brand new, zero-day software exploit being actively used by a foreign adversary.
Okay.
Because the DoD's policies are version-controlled text, the AI can instantly scan the entire policy database, identify the specific instruction governing software patching for that exact vulnerability, flag it, draft a proposed revision to counter the new threat, and automatically launch a pull request for human review.
Oh my gosh. The policy adapts to the threat in minutes rather than sitting in an email chain for months.
Exactly.
That is incredible. But wait, if we have AI analyzing, structuring, and even drafting policy updates for the military, how do we avoid baking historical biases into the rules that govern the use of force or personnel or resources?
Right.
Because AI models learn from historical data, and historical data contains human biases.
This raises an important question, and the author does address the ethical and operational risks of AI head on. If an AI creates an opaque decision where nobody understands why a military rule was changed, I mean, that is a massive liability.
A total black box.
Exactly. So the paper outlines several mitigation strategies. First, demanding highly diverse training data sets and active bias mitigation techniques during the model's development.
Okay, what else?
Second, requiring explainable AI.
Explainable AI, meaning the system has to show its work.
Exactly. The models must provide a transparent audit trail of their logic. Human decision makers have to understand the why behind an AI recommendation rather than just accepting a black box output.
Right, they can't just say the computer said so.
No, never. Finally, the paper advocates for establishing a dedicated AI ethics board within the DoD to oversee these automated tools. The AI functions as a powerful assistant and an incredibly fast reviewer, but the final accountable decision must always rest with a human in the loop.
So what does this all mean for you? We've talked about Git pipelines, LaTeX compilers, military generals, and AI threat intelligence.
It's been quite a journey.
Yeah, but the core lesson of this white paper applies directly to your life. Whether you are managing a small startup team, organizing a local community group, or preparing for a massive corporate strategy shift.
Absolutely.
Static rules create static organizations.
If the rules that govern your team are locked away in a dusty PDF or an unread employee handbook, your team cannot adapt to new challenges.
By treating the rules that govern us as dynamic, collaborative, and highly traceable, by treating them as code, any organization, no matter how large or bureaucratic, can become more agile and more transparent.
And to really drive home the ultimate endpoint of that agility, I want to leave you with a final thought pulled from the paper section on imaginative future directions.
Yeah.
Once you successfully turn policy into code, you open the door to self-enforcing policies with blockchain-driven smart contracts.
Wait, using blockchain for government policy.
Imagine a world where a procurement policy or a vendor security standard isn't just a document you read and hopefully comply with. Imagine it is a literal piece of executable code existing on a secure blockchain network.
Whoa.
If a vendor tries to process a transaction with the DoD, but their systems fail a real-time security scan, the policy as smart contract literally blocks the payment from going through in real time.
No way.
Yeah, it doesn't send an email warning a compliance officer. It stops the action from occurring entirely. It is a world where policy doesn't just dictate action from a filing cabinet. The policy is the action.
The rule enforces itself dynamically. That completely changes what it means to govern an organization.
It really does.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the systems and the rules around you, and maybe double check if that final PDF you just emailed your team is actually the final version. We'll catch you next time.